This is the Man Up Podcast, the doctor's guide to men's health. Each week on our podcast, we interview the top specialists of the field on various topics in men's health. You have questions that you are too afraid to ask? We have the answers. This week, our episode is titled, The Birds and the Bees, How to Have the Talk with Your Kids. I'm Dr. Kevin Chu, and I'm joined as always with my co-host, Dr. Justin Dubin. Justin, it's beautiful to see your face, man. Glad to see that, you know, you had an enjoyable vacation.
Yeah, it was great. I was in Africa for 3 weeks. We talked about it before. Saw some amazing things. It was in South Africa.
Your photos look amazing. Kenya. Absolutely amazing.
It was awesome. I mean, trip of a lifetime. If you get the chance to go to Africa, do safari, maybe walk with the gorillas in Burundi and in Uganda. All the money really goes to conservation of the gorillas, which is really cool and important. I will warn you, it is a huge hike. Like literally you have to walk like a couple miles in the jungle to see it, but to see, you know,
gorillas, do you camp out overnight there or no?
No. Like it's like, you get there at like 8 o'clock in the morning, 7:30 in the morning.
Gotcha.
They give you like a debriefing and then you go with a group, like you have a leader.
Gotcha.
And you just hike. They know where all of the gorillas are. There's 22 groups and families of gorillas and like they have the trekkers out there already. So, you know, you're assigned a family and then you go see the gorilla family. It takes about an hour. Sometimes it could take 2 hours to get there. It could take 3 hours.
Yeah.
Depends on where the gorillas are. And it's a lot. It's a big physical task, but it's amazing. I was like 5 feet away from
the gorillas. I saw it. You were like right there. They were right in front of your face.
So
would you say that was the highlight of your trip?
I would say, honestly, that was partly, but the Great Migration was pretty incredible. The Great Migration is in Kenya, where once a year, it's like 1.5 million wildebeests cross like a river over to the other side to get to more, to literally greener pastures for food. And I saw thousands and thousands and thousands of these things, like making the decision and just crossing the river. It's really cool. So that was pretty magical. It was just a really wonderful trip. And now you're going on your trip now, finally.
Yeah. Going to be headed out. We'll go do a little bit of time in France, up in Paris, south of France for a little bit. Then head out to southern Italy, which I've never been to, area called Puglia. Try to relax out there, enjoy the sun, and then I'll finally make my way up into Switzerland and do a little bit of hiking. So I'm really excited, you know.
Man.
So.
Yeah, that's going to be great. And the baby's coming with you. How exciting. That's going to be fun. That's going to make it fun.
My face doesn't look so excited. But, you know, on that note, you know, we are doing a really interesting episode. We have, you know, our fantastic friend and just, you know, someone who's so smart in this area to talk to kids about, you know, sex. Right, Justin?
Yeah, listen, your kid's obviously not old enough.
A little too early.
Just one year old. But we have Dr. Lisa Paz, who's been on the show before as, you know, an excellent sex, marriage and sex therapist. And a friend of ours, a friend of the show who, you know, we always, you know, can't recommend her enough in South Florida if you're down here. So she's on again. And it's back to school time, right? Like all the kids are going
Absolutely.
Back to school. And, you know, part of that, I mean, some of these kids were at a sleepaway camp or you haven't had the opportunity to really have these kind of conversations, or maybe you didn't want to have this kind of conversation in the beginning of the year, but now
That's
they're
right.
going back to school. Maybe they're starting to learn some new sex education in school. And, you know, a lot of that, you know, some parents are intimidated by that, whether it's your first kid or, you know, maybe you didn't like how you did it the first time around.
Right.
So I think we have a really excellent talk about how to, you know, have this talk about gender identity, sexual identity with your child. And I think now in today's age, it's more important than ever that we're doing it in a considerate way, a thoughtful way. And Dr. Paz really is, I think, as good as it gets when you're talking about these things, right, Kev?
You're absolutely right. And I'll tell you, as a new parent, you know, I haven't even thought about that portion, you know, whenever I'm, you know, with my kid, but you just always have so many questions about how to do things. And this is one of them. And I think for a lot of our listeners,
I'm sure a lot of our listeners have, you know, kids or will be having kids that enter this range at some point. And they're going to kind of want to know how do we do this? What's the best way to go about it? And, you know, no better way to get than the answers from someone that's a specialist. So I think
Absolutely.
So let's jump in.
The last thing though, is I think that what's interesting when you're talking about schools and education on these topics versus the way we talk about it with Lisa and this is there is this kind of gradual understanding of these things. And, you know, I think that that's one thing that I really learned in this is, you know, because obviously I don't have kids. You just have your first kid, like you said, there's different levels and different ages of conceptualizing a lot of these things. It's not like when I think we went to school, it was like, all right, I remember 13 years old. It was like the birds and the bees. It's parents, like the dads go with the sons, the moms go with the daughters.
Right.
That's not how it is anymore. It's not going to be like that because I think we've progressed as a society and really understand that there is this maturity as you grow up in age. You're also understanding these things at some level.
That's a good point. And also information is much more available to kids these days, right? So that's something to think about. So.
Yeah, you Google like penis or boobs or something, even in an educational way, I don't think you're going to get something educational at first.
Less imagination these days, more visual is more present, you know, so.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, I think that's it. I'm ready to get into the episode. What about you, Kev?
Sounds good. Let's jump in. All right.
All right. Let's do it. Enjoy the episode, guys. Do want to welcome friend of the podcast, Dr. Lisa Paz, who's a marriage and sex therapist. She's down in private practice down in Miami, Florida, and she's been on before, and we love having her on. Welcome on, yes. Dr. Paz.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me. You know, I love you both so much, and I love being on.
Oh, we love you.
We love you.
So thankful that you're on here with us.
I'm excited about the talk. I'm excited to talk about the talk. I'm so glad that we're doing this conversation. I remember weird talks and like they were weird. And I still remember like my mother, her voice would get low and she'd be like, Hailey, do you have any questions? And I was like, is questions now like a drop off in tone? And it cued me that something was weird and off. And I had vowed to myself, like, I will never get it weird again or give it weird.
Yeah. I mean, listen, you are the perfect person to bring on for this talk.
Yes,
obviously, all you talk about is, you know, you talk about marriage, relationships, sex. And I think one of my favorite things I've seen you do on your Instagram is when you talk about how to normalize these conversations with your sons. And you have three beautiful sons.
I do. I have three sons, which has sparked sort of a very high interest in how to do this talk. And I've been doing it since they were little. And in fact, yeah, your son at 8 months is still too young, but it's going to be interesting as we go forward in this conversation tonight to look at like how it's not a talk you have, but it's a whole tone you set throughout childhood. And like, we'll talk about how to set that tone so that there are different chapters that start very early that aren't really about sex as we think about sex, like penetration and hard-ons and this and that, but really that start with body comfort and body health and not cueing young kids that their body is shameful or that they should be embarrassed about body functions and body parts, right? So like, it starts a lot earlier than we think it does when we talk about sort of like setting tone and setting tone for healthy sexuality, right? And so the precursor is much less about talking about mechanics of sex and much more about getting kids both aware of and comfortable with their body. And it starts there. And then, I mean, we can talk about, I'll let you guys stack it up, but we'll talk about sort of like how to move through it in a great way, you know?
I love that.
Being comfortable with your body, you know, normalizing it. I think that's just excellent, you know?
Well, and for those who are listening who have had sex, right, you know that the best sex is people that are comfortable in their bodies. And you guys know as urologists, and I know as a sex therapist, like psychogenic erectile dysfunction, delayed ejaculation, premature ejaculation, right? the more comfortable a man is in his body, the more resilient he is to any sort of sexual dysfunction. And that messaging can begin much, much earlier on than we realize, right? And so the man who's in his 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, who is having sort of their penis stop cooperating, but they've been awkward in their body or they never had their body break down, all of a sudden there's a lag, and it doesn't just become about what the prescription is to fix the erection. There's a whole mental thing about my body's betraying me. And so we can sort of start addressing that early on. And for female partners, right, the earlier we teach girls that bodies change and break down and everyone's comfortable, the less hangups there are down the line. So as people listen to this dialogue that we're going to have, like, it's, yes, it's about how to talk to your kids, but it's also about, like, what the outcome is down the line for, like,
healthy big picture people. Implications.
Thank
so,
you.
Big picture implications, and not to make a big deal of it, it is actually a big deal, as you just said, right? It is, yeah. It is, and like, this is kind of the funny thing, because I, when we're talking about it, we want to make it casual. We want to make people comfortable talking about it. But we want to emphasize in a way that you just said, this is an important conversation to have and a necessary conversation, as awkward as it may feel for you. I mean, some people just really don't want to have these kinds of talks with their kids. Now, that kind of leads into the first question. You know, traditionally, like when you were in school, when I was in school, when Kevin was in school, you know, a lot of these conversations were really happening in the classroom. You know, I remember watching those very awkward, you know, this is what happens when your body changes.
They put the tape in, you know, and then you watch this like old, very dry, you know, instructional video in some sort of
ways. Yeah, and then you see, like, you see like the penis grow hair, and then you see the breasts develop buds, and you're like, this is very uncomfortable. So like, traditionally it was really in the classrooms, and they would have like a parents' night where the guys would go with the dads and the girls would go with the moms, and they would talk about it. And that was kind of the biggest exposure. But, you know, today is a completely different beast, you know, with the internet, with YouTube, with all these platforms for people to get access to. You know, my question kind of is like, who do you think is the best person to be teaching kids about these topics? Is it the schools? Is it the parents? Is it siblings? Is it family members? Is it YouTube? Or is it a combination of everything?
Well, we can assume that it's going to be a combination, right? So I think that we should assume they're going to get information from like a multifactorial influx. But as a parent or a caregiver, if you want to be the one that is managing the information, you better be the primary disseminator. And that requires you leaning into the conversation. That requires you not being afraid to have it. That requires you creating an environment where your kids can ask questions to you first, instead of going to their friend, instead of going to the internet. And so, like, for parents these days that are raising kids, you better believe it's all available to them.
Right.
So if you want to get a handle on it first, you better create the environment. And that starts way earlier than we think. So like, my first offering to parents is always tone. Get really comfortable saying body parts, and say them early and say it abundantly. And I don't know about you guys when you have men come in, but I'm always surprised when I'm working with adults how uncomfortable they are about just referencing genitals. I'll have women come in and be like, the problem down there. And I'm like, what? And they're like, it's down there. And you're thinking like, if they can't even say
it. We have that same thing. Yeah.
Yes. I imagine you guys do, right? They have a problem. And how are they going to look at their kid and be like, hey, how's your penis? Is it growing? Do you have any questions? You know, as they don't have the dialogue. So the first step that I always encourage parents to do is get comfortable with the verbs and the language, right? Whatever the verbiage is, get comfortable. Practice saying things like breast, vagina, vulva, penis, balls, testicles. Like, practice saying it, because if it comes out weird as you're telling your kids, then immediately you're cueing them, it's weird, right? And kids are very nonverbal. They're looking at your tone. They're looking at your body language much more than they're looking at the content. So if you're like, hey, you know, right?
Feel like apprehensive about it. They're going to get that. They're going to feel that, you know?
Immediately. Right. And so first line is, you got to create like a really comfortable dialogue, just talking about bodies and the way bodies work, and telling them that their body is healthy, and like eliminating any shame around sort of bodies. The second piece to this, and this is the early piece, Kev, right? Like, we need to teach public and private parts. So like a lot of times we very quickly shame our kids into self-touch, right? Because kids touch themselves and the penis has nerve endings and the vulva and the clitoris have nerve endings. And so like kids are exploratory. And they also, there's a lot of research that looks at toddlers want to touch other toddlers. And what's the first thing we do? We're like, no. And so then immediately we teach them like, oh shit, they can't be touching themselves there. Right. So you want to teach kind of this like public parts, private parts, so that they understand it's not shame, but there's appropriate versus inappropriate stuff. Mm. Right. And anyway, this is, I know I've like sidetracked already, but
no, this is excellent information.
Yeah.
But this is sort of laying the foundation for what we think of as like the birds and the bees talk, but no one should have the talk. It should be a series of talks that are age appropriate as you're raising your kids, right? And so like when they start going to school and they can actually talk when they're 3 and 4, you want to teach them about safe touch. And that's an extension of public and private touch. Like who can touch you where and why? You want to teach them that they can touch themselves, but it needs to be in private, right? I'm going to tell you guys a story. My kids will kill me. One of my kids, when he was little, liked to touch himself. And it wasn't sexual, right?
I'm again, pretty sure that's like most kids.
Most kids. We get uncomfortable, right? We assign the like, no. Anyway, so he was in our family room watching TV. And I looked at him and I was like, buddy, like you can touch yourself. You can't do it while we're all watching TV in the family room. Like you need to go to the bathroom or the bedroom. So he looked at us, we were in our kitchen and like looking into the family room. He took a blanket and covered himself and continued to touch. And we were like, buddy, we can still see you, even though you can't see us. But anyway, so the idea is when you see your kids, right, in a self-exploration, to not panic, to not over-sexualize it, to not assign meaning to it and be like, oh my God, but just to let them know, like, just like they can't fart or just pick their nose at a dinner table, in the same way you're teaching them sort of how to manage other body functions and other body parts in public and private spaces, sexual touch is no different, or touch on private sexualized parts. Does that make sense?
Makes 100% sense.
Yeah. It's like the appropriateness of it, right? But you're not like trying to make it like this is bad. It's like this is not an appropriate time to do it.
Period. Right. And that – go ahead, Jay.
I think that what you're – I think the key word here is eliminating the idea of shame, because when you create shame, that is the thing that translates on later in life. You know, comfort and understanding norms is what is important. But if you incorporate shame and embarrassment with these kinds of things early on, that is where things can develop into a problem.
100%. 100%. So those early years should be focused around just using really like proper anatomy and really neutral language. And then as it goes forward, right, you start to shape the information more proportionate to their ages. But be the front line. And research shows, I have a lot of parents that are like, well, if I tell them, am I giving them permission? And what research actually shows is the best model is information plus family values and ethics equals sort of the healthiest outcome. So just because you're telling them, I'm going to fast forward now off of toddlers and like young kids, but as they get older, right, ages 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, depending on how advanced and precocious your kids are, just because you're giving them information, you're not necessarily giving them permission. And it's a great opportunity explain something. And then tag your family value right into it, right? Like my kids can talk very literately about a lot of things. And they also know that they can't have sex when they're 13 because they're not going to be ready, right? So there's a really good opportunity to talk about it and then immediately tag it with whatever your family value is. We won't allow dating until 15. We don't believe in this until after 18. You know, whatever anyone's family structure is. But that's really the platform is information plus family value.
I love that.
Yeah, no.
It's fascinating because, you know, we started this talk thinking like, oh, there's a singular to talk. But now as we're talking with Dr. Paz, this is a longitudinal thing. This is expansive. It starts at all ages that you're kind of like getting the feeling right, you know?
100%. If you're doing it well and you're raising like sexually positive aware people, it's not one talk because I mean, think about your sexuality. It's still average. I don't know. I'm I'm still evolving, aren't you guys? Like, right. What you liked 10 years Hopefully, ago, 5 yeah. years ago. Yeah. Totally. No, and I'll tell you too, we don't realize, or we do because we're in the field, but people perhaps don't realize that even grown adults who are having decent sex or good sex, how hard it is for them to actually communicate just in neutrality.
Oh, absolutely.
And absolutely. So, go ahead. No,
I totally agree. I totally agree with everything you're saying. I mean, the a lot of this stems on this idea that we're going to do it once, we're going to talk once, we're going to have this idea of sex and go on your way. But everything you're saying is exactly the opposite. And obviously we agree with that, right? It's yeah. not like, oh man, I got to take a deep breath when they turn 16 or whatever, 13, when they hit puberty, I got to have this talk. It's like, that's not a big deal. That talk is not a big deal because I've already pretty much summed everything up. It's just small mini talks and gradual, you know, gradual times throughout your life. And then there is no big talk. The talk doesn't exist because it's just little talks that we never have this giant jump in knowledge. It's a gradual progression of knowledge. And that's kind of like anything really in life. It doesn't have to be sex. It should be the same way.
Exactly. No. 1000%. I feel like you just captured it. And what it also allows for down the line when they're older and in relationships and married, that they also can talk to their partner in neutrality about sex, about wanting things, about things changing. I mean, I see adults who are really in good relationships and still can't have like an above board conversation. And the earlier it starts for you to sort of teach that sex is normal, it's healthy, there's right and wrong as it relates to whatever your family value is as you're raising your kids, but that like there's nothing to be ashamed of, then they carry that. You carry that and you become a better lover, right? You're more comfortable in your body. You have more language available to you and you understand that it's normal. It might be private, but it's normal. And there's a difference between private and secret, private and normal, private and not normal. And so the other thing is that I often encourage parents to think about is that privacy doesn't equal secrecy, right? Because we don't want to teach secrecy around sex. That's how kids become vulnerable to any negative touch, to people touching them inappropriately. We want them to recognize like negative, unsafe touch. We want them to recognize adults that are touching them in private places, right? And so there's a lot of, the more you talk about it, the more savvy your kids become about what safe touch is. So this is also a protective talk, right? As they understand their body, they're also able to recognize what is appropriate and inappropriate for adults around them. Does that make sense?
It makes 100% sense. And I think since we're talking about the role of parents here, I do think it's important, you know, and I brought this up when we were talking about the traditional way in which we were learning sex. It was the guys would go with their dads, the moms would go with the daughters. And I think it's important, and I want you to shed light on this, that we don't get just one perspective of one parent, because I think for two reasons. One, you know, obviously females and males, or doesn't have to be female and male, you're two adults. Sure. Have different perspectives on this, and they may want to shed different lights on sex and have, you know, and I think that is also important. So I think both parents in the relationship really should have a say. It shouldn't be assigned to just one person to bear that, you know, responsibility.
No, 100%. And you just create a healthier human being if you're dialoguing in your house about it in neutrality, right? It is science, it's biology, it is part of our existence and is part of development. So if we don't project our own weirdness and neuroses and idiosyncrasies onto it, we don't make it like, oh, go ask your mom, go ask your dad, right? Because all of that cues them. It cues them that it's weird. It cues them that it's something taboo versus being able to be like, yeah, what's up? Again, just because we're talking about it doesn't mean it's okay to do today, but what's going on, you know? I will tell you, you know, I do the lion's share of the talking in my house about it for obvious reasons, but when the time came to actually talk to my children about the mechanics of penetration, I wanted them to understand. So I'm downloading sort of the whole shtick in their head. And my husband walks in, who is a dentist, so obviously has like an interest in the mouth, goes, and did you tell him about the oral kind? And I was like, listen, Tiger, we're not on that chapter yet. We're not there. You slow down, Mr. Oral Kind. Give me another year for that one. I'm going slow and steady. But Yes, it should belong to both parents. And again, if we talk about taking the shame out, if we talk about fast forward to when the body may or may not be cooperating, the more normalcy in cross-gender dialogue, if you are in a heterosexual relationship, it's all programming, guys, right? So the more it just lays the foundation down the line to be able to talk to your partner with more fluidity.
That, well, I guess that, I guess I'm not free of the responsibility of doing some of this, I guess, in the future.
There you go.
But yeah, Dr. Paz, going back to, you know, Justin brought up, you know, also on the note that we were brought to classrooms, we're, you know, given this video, it was a terrible instructional video. Are there, you know, for parents, are there a specific resource that you just don't recommend them to use for, you know, any of these topics?
So obviously I'm like wide open and I believe in science, right? And so I am very pro content that supports both science and evolution and the normalcy of sex. There are religious resources that I think don't necessarily support that. So personally, that will never be a space that I endorse, but I respect, I guess, that everyone has to, you know, walk their path. I just don't know that you set up for the best information. And again, I think that if parents can look at raising sexually healthy kids both as a continuous dialogue and just as part of normal life, it should just be information exchange. And it doesn't have to be more than that. So any resources that aren't sort of treating it like, hey, here's the information, then I would recommend against that, you know?
It's a fair point. Fair point. I think we can both agree with that. I think information is key here, and any situation that doesn't want to shed the true light on what's going on, or maybe wants to change the information, I think is problematic. But that's anything with your health, really.
Thank you. Exactly. And I think we should think about sex as just like another piece of our whole person and our whole health, you know? And by doing that, if people can, it neutralizes the content a little bit, you know? And this is part of what we're trying to do in raising kids is neutralize the content. You don't need to be afraid to talk about it. You don't need to be inappropriate about it. You can stick to safety, anatomy, and then as they develop, puberty, right? We make like those videos you're talking about, somehow they make sex ed really just anatomy of puberty, right? And they're two different things. Going through puberty is not sex ed. Going through puberty is going through puberty, right? That's a developmental stage in our anatomic development. And having sex is very different than that. And somehow we like mush it together. And that's also where body shame takes place, right? Where we're like, sex ed, now you have breast buds. And you see all these girls like, well, what was that? Right. No, that, I mean, that's just your body developing. Sex ed is something totally different, right? And so that, you know?
It's a great, great point. It really is.
On that note of puberty, right? You mentioned puberty. It, you know, now that I'm starting to think down the line, you know, for my son.
Yes.
You know, what is there? I mean, I know we're talking about like it takes. You know, it's not just one singular point, but is there like a time frame or age where you should start talking about puberty to your children?
Yes. So you can do it right before you notice that they're going to really start getting the secondary sex characteristics, right? Like right at the point where you see a little peach fuzz or a little bit of armpit hair, you see the skin changing, right? We all sort of know that like at the foothills of puberty, that's when you should start having a more robust conversation, right? I also think along the way, there is a very big power in being a listener. And I think as parents, people are so interested in doing the talking, but it's important to find out what they know. Like, hey, what do you think of this? Do you know what that means? And that gives you a good gauge because different kids have different levels of exposure. Different kids are growing up in different, like a metropolitan kid might have more exposure than a kid growing up in a more rural area or more religious area. A kid with an older sibling 100% will have access to more information than a kid who's an only child or who is the older sibling rather. So also just taking an inventory on like where your kids are at developmentally. My boys are like doo-doo-doo, right? They're very sporty kids. And if it wasn't for the fact that I was so dialed in, I don't even know that it would be particularly on their radar versus like I have friends who have kids in New York and they're like a little more precocious and those boys know they're just more on it. So I think you want to look for both cues as it relates to, you know, the secondary sex characteristics and also just we know that by age 12, right, your child should know what an erection is. They should understand that babies come from having sex. They should know what ejaculation process is. Like, you should start, they should start understanding at an anatomical level what some of these processes are. Now, you also just have to take an honest look at who your kid is. And if they are a little more precocious or if they're in a more exposed environment, then maybe you level up the info a little bit. And if they're still kind of innocent or naive, then you buy yourself 6 months, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's kind of important because you have to kind of gauge where they are with their friends, right? Because you don't want to have the kid who's either like too aggressive in the friend group or he doesn't want the guy who's like, I don't know what you guys are talking about. You know, like you kind of want to put everyone on the same page because there is definitely some social aspect to these. I mean, we all remember that being like, well, you know, like sex, how that works? Like, this is crazy. You know, like it's an actual conversation that these kids have and they will continue to have. We're always talking about sex. I mean, as we grow up, sex is a major conversation at the table for almost every single time someone's having dinner with a friend or a colleague, or not a colleague, hopefully, but but I think this kind of leads to the question around sex because it really has changed over the years. Like going back to the internet, this like idea like porn exposure and like all these other things. Like, you know, you mentioned like kids, you said by age of 12, you know, ejaculation and all of these things. But like a lot of our parents, or at least my parents, I think my parents are very open, but I think a lot of us were never used to that, right? Like they were just used to like, all right, you know, you don't watch anything, we don't talk about it, and it's gone. And we start, we're talking about getting this concept done earlier and earlier. Is there an age that you think is too young, or like when we're talking about the actual act of sex, like how do parents decide to approach this? Because I think it is also, you know, and we'll get into it, there's other aspects of sex, what defines sex, as you were kind of leading into as well. I don't know, just kind of give us a little bit of an enlightenment of like how to kind of start thinking about this from a mental aspect, because I think that we are at a different age where a lot of us didn't talk about this sometimes with our parents. We were the ones watching those videos.
Totally. So again, I think that you got to take a read on who your kid is and where they are developmentally. But I think somewhere between 10 and 12 is probably the time where they should understand that, you know, babies are made from sex. If they want to know what how the actual act of sex is, you can ask them, do you want to know? They may tell you no. They may cue you they're not ready. But again, somewhere before 12, you know, by 12, I'm going to go ahead and say right before teenage, they really should understand, you know, that an erection and penetration is a heterosexual dynamic, and that's how procreation is. You know, they should understand it through that level. And also, starting around 13 is where, if not sooner, again, I can't reiterate this enough. Right. Some of this is a little bit depending on your kid, right? But you want to start teaching the responsibility attached to this behavior. You want to teach them that it feels good and that it's going to be a pleasure-oriented activity, but it comes with a host of responsibilities. For people raising sons, you want to start teaching very early, no is no, and that if someone says no, immediately they have to back off. You always want to reiterate this idea of public and private parts, even if the language changes over the years, right? That like, if someone doesn't want to be touched, they're like, you just don't touch them there. And that dialogue should be a continuous dialogue. One of the things that I think is new to these upcoming generations that I encourage parents to talk about is you got to have the dialogue that pornography is not real.
I was gonna,
sex.
Yeah, that's a really important question that we were gonna ask for sure.
It's not.
Poor Rosa. yeah, I mean, I'm talking about, you know.
Well, what about the idea of just even discussing pornography in the first place, right?
Yes.
Like kids are gonna get their hands on it. Trust me. Kevin knows, I know, you know. We find a way.
The internet just.
Yeah.
If your kids have a tablet, Or some access to an electronic device that you don't have parental blocks on. Mm-hmm. It is at that juncture that you need to start either letting them know that if people reach out to them online in a certain way, it's not okay. That if anyone asks for pictures of them, it's not okay. That if they Google any sites that look like it's adult content, and then you can talk about what adult content is, naked men, naked women, right? Public and private parts or private parts in public space, not okay, right? At that point is when you have sort of round one of this discussion. As your kids get older, 11, 12, 13, is when you can start letting them know, hey, pornography is sort of like when we're watching action films and you see cars flip over or you see someone shoot someone, right? Like that stuff is for your entertainment. They have entertainment that is for sex. That's not real. It's not what real sexuality is, right?
And so I love that. That's a great way of describing it. That's a great way of describing it.
That's what you want it to be, right? You want them to understand. And again, if you note my tone, it's neutral. It's just like a movie that you're watching when they go to outer space or anything. Like, it's okay, but it's not real. And we don't need to get weird about it. We don't need to assign judgment to it. We just need to let them know it's out there and here's what it is. And the reason I say this is because they're going to get their hands on it anyway. So you might as well get the message in first. You might as well be the one first to let them know, like, hey, this is out there and it's not real. And it, you know how, well, you guys just heard recently a lecture on pornography and sexual dysfunction males, right? Mm-hmm. Like for those that have teenage boys that are a little bit further on that, you know, that they're engaging in masturbatory habits already, like you should be giving them the dialogue that, hey, if you're watching porn, don't overwatch it. You're going to create a singular pathway to arousal. Yeah. You're going to screw yourself up down the line. Like, again, you would tell your kids don't smoke because it can lead to cancer. We know that, right? This is sort of these same cautionary tales that don't need to be, we don't need to be weird about it. We just need
sexual
to
health
say
is
it.
Health. Bottom line, sexual health is health. And if you can't have a conversation about your sexual health, then you're not providing them the best knowledge of how to improve their health and keep their health, overall health well.
You totally. Know,
I mean, that's it.
I like that, Justin. I do. I like that. All right, Dr. Paz, we're going to bring it back. So, you know, I think it's important to bring up the fact that, you know, sex was traditionally taught to be between a man and a woman. Obviously, that's not always the case, and we need to educate children on other types of sex, whether it is a man with another man or a woman with another woman. So, you know, how do we incorporate that into the conversation?
So, again, there... this requires you both checking your own comfort level and your value structure, right? As it relates to how early or not you feel like showing your children unconventional situations. And I'm not just talking about romance, right? This can be other sorts of unconventional things. Yep. So that's first a value check on yourself, which we're all doing as parents constantly. And then sort of your second round is there anyone in our immediate circle that they are seeing that falls into any of these categories that I either should explain or that I can use as an immediate example, right? And so that gives immediate information. I always suggest that parents look through movies, other social media content that their kids are consuming. Is there an opportunity to leverage into that discussion? Mm. And again, there are so many books, but if we're talking dinner table style, as early as 6, 7, 8, on just different kinds of families, right? Some people are being raised by grandparents. Mm. Some people are being raised by a mom and a dad. Some people are single and raising kids. Some people have divorced parents. Some people have a black mom and a white dad. Some people are Asian. Some people are Jewish, right? And some people are two women. And some people live across the globe. And, you know, we can embed it into a variety of things that should suggest either different than what your family structure looks like, and or different than anyone in your immediate circle. And it's just another way to say, like, there's a lot of constellations and that's it. And we don't need to make it more. A lot of parents are afraid, if I tell them, am I endorsing it, right? So if I tell my kids that their uncle is gay and he has a boyfriend, like, am I making him permission to be gay? No, it's not. Homosexuality is not that flexible, right? It's not that suggestible.
We know that. Yes, this is correct. Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%.
So the idea is to embed it in the course of teaching that families look many different ways, right? They can look many different ways as it relates to religion, race, creed, and then structure. Two moms, two dads, one mom, one dad, a mom and a dad, a grandparent, an aunt, adoptive parents, right? There's like so many different family constellations.
Absolutely. And I love how you say it, because the truth is that when kids are kids, they don't understand the rules, and there are no rules, right? So we are creating this stigma or this construct of what is normal and not normal, and we're projecting that onto them. If we don't make it a big deal, why would they make it a big deal? It doesn't matter. Just like you said, it's just another relationship. It's a little different than mine. Who cares? Like, and if we tell people, if we tell kids that this is weird or this is bad, and bringing back that idea of shame or, you know, secrets, that's where that problem comes in. And that's where it gets uncomfortable. So yeah, I think that's an amazing way of looking at it.
I'm going to tell you another funny story. I have so many to draw from, but this one's good too. So I always leave room for the idea that my kids can date whoever they want. So I'm very conscious of not using language like, and your girlfriend. I'm always like, and whoever you fall in love with, right? I always sort of leave it very open. And if I catch myself defaulting to like, and your girlfriend, I'm always like, or your boyfriend, right? And like, I always just sort of want them to know, you come as you are. I don't really care. I will accept it no matter what. So the other day we're all at the table, and I think I made a reference to clearly heterosexuality. I was like, you know, your wife is going to be lucky. And I was like, or your husband, whatever you guys want, whatever you want. And my older son looked at me and he goes, Mom, I'm sorry to tell you, it's going to be a woman. It's not going to be a man. He was like letting me down easy that it was going to be a very like heterosexual normative trajectory of like, Mom, I just want you to know it's going to be a woman. And I was like, all right, listen, as you wish.
You know, anyway. On that note, Dr. Pastor, when talking about sex with your child also brings up the opportunity to discuss sexuality, gender identity.
Gender identity.
Totally. And so,
you know, how do we approach this, these topics? You know, I think you were kind of touching upon it a little bit.
Yeah, so you can start, listen, the gender identity starts very early, right? The sense of being a boy or being a girl, and you can witness it in our kids. I mean, we do it as a society very early, right? As soon as your wife is pregnant, what's the first question everyone asks? Like, having a boy or are you having a girl? And what's the first thing that we do, even in hospitals, right? They get a little pink hat or a little blue hat. Like, we break it down very, very early, and we funnel into that. And some of it, listen, some of it is self-selecting. If they're, you know, quintessential boys, I think they gravitate towards certain behavior sets, and, you know, quintessential girls gravitate. But the idea is to not pigeonhole your kid, right? To not get uncomfortable if they are showing, if they want to pick up a doll, right? They're picking up a doll. If they want to pick up a fire truck, they're picking up a fire truck. We're the ones that start making it way more loaded than it is. Again, back to who your kids are in the society you're living in. If you're living in a big city, you need to be talking a little more about differences than if you're living in a very homogenous small town. You probably can wait a little bit longer for these conversations. But the sense of being a boy or being a girl, who you're attracted to, right? Somewhere between 8 and 12 is when kids really are grasping this idea of like a boyfriend or a girlfriend or a girlfriend or a girlfriend. And so, again, I think you need to catch what is in your environment to cue the level of dialogue, but it's really just saying it, right? Like, and children who are really struggling with gender identity, you will know it is not that nuanced. And again, not dissimilar to homosexuality. It's not that suggestible, right? Like I can give you 18,000 Barbies and I could have from the day you were born. And like, you still would have wound up a heterosexual cisgendered male. Like it is just, it's not as flexible as our fears. You know, our fears are way more flexible than someone's gender identity.
And also not talking about it isn't going to change it either. Right. Like just immediately just being like, I just won't bring it up. It's fine. It's like, that's not going to change the results.
Totally.
You know, that's totally. Really not going to change anything.
No. So the best is to lean into it. And again, what I really want to underscore is by having a series of dialogues and creating a space, what it allows for is as your kids may be confused about a topic, as your kids may be ready or wanting to experiment, as your kid, you're going to be the one they go to. And what a gift to be the frontline information disseminator. How many kids in an effort to information seek, end up experimenting or finding information from places that you as a parent would be like, oh my God, please, anyone but that person or any behavior but that. But if you're not willing to be the front line, they're going to find it somewhere, you know?
I think it's such an important point. It's like, you don't want to be the parent who is like, who your child is like, God, I got to go talk to this guy about this thing. Or like, you want to be the person who's like, I don't know, like my friends and I don't know. Let's go talk to my dad, or let's talk to my mom. Let's go figure that out. That's who you want to be. I think everyone wants to be that. But in order to get to that point, you have to be willing to put in the work, right? It just doesn't automatically happen. Like, oh, well.
It's not a flip of a switch, right? It's not just like, boom. Yeah.
Right. No, entirely. That's entirely right. So it's like, if you want to be that person, you just need to be that person. And you're more, I think parents are so afraid to make a mistake or say the wrong thing. By not speaking, you really say the wrong thing, right? Like, it's not, you're not going to mess it up. There's not that much that you're going to mess up by just simply creating a space. And again, when in doubt, particularly age 11 and under, it's about anatomy. It's about development. It's about safety. It's about just neutral dialogue. It gets more nuanced as they hit puberty, just because then we're talking more about pleasure, mechanics, body respect, no means no, but masturbation, et cetera. But for, you know, prepubescent and below, it's really more neutral and available than I think parents realize.
So, you know, I think one of the takeaways is that you point out very nicely, there's no set way to do this. There isn't a formula or anything like this, but, you know, it's something that you should be cognizant to at least normalize, not, you know, don't be so secretive about certain things. And it's, again, there's no set rules, but
there's no set rules. I created a course that people can go to my website and download, which is how to talk to your kids about sex, ages 2 to 11. And it is a step-by-step guide with a workbook that is attached that checks parents' own sort of value structure and system attached to it, so that they can work through whatever weirdness they have. They can take an inventory on their own childhood messages that they're pushing forth. And it's like, it's very good, not because it's mine. It's good. And I really encourage people to check it out.
That's awesome. So it's something that they can find just by going to your website, correct?
They can go to my website at drlisapaz.com under the courses tab, and they can see very easily under the courses tab a downloadable course for how to talk to your kids about sex. And like I said, it's a step-by-step guide that really just expands on everything that we are talking about tonight.
Awesome. That's perfect. And as everyone who listened to this episode, including Kevin and I, now definitely know, we knew before, but now we really know, you are truly a master of this topic. And I'm sure those resources will be very, very valuable. Probably to me and Kevin at some point, for sure, at least.
Because you're going to go back definitely. And relearn your body positivity and no shame.
Yes.
You guys, I love you both. I'm so grateful every time we get to talk, and you guys are just so smart, and everything that you do is amazing.
No, you're awesome. Thank you so much. We love you so much. We really appreciate you coming on, as always. So once again, thank you, Dr. Paz. What's your Instagram handle so people can follow you?
Dr. Lisa Paz. Also, zero creativity there. Dr.
Very
Lisa
easy,
Paz.
Very easy. Very easy. So follow her on Instagram as well. As always, any questions, comments, concerns, feel free to reach out to Kevin or I via our social media platforms on Instagram, TikTok. You can also, Instagram, TikTok, or Twitter. You can follow Man Up Pod, the Man Up Pod, on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter as well. You can please check out our site. It's brand new. It's up. It's really cool. Kevin did a great job. Kevin, where can they find our website? What's the website?
It's www.themanuppod.com.
All right. And if you are a listener to our podcast, feel free to always listen on any podcasting platform, whether it's Spotify, iTunes. You can also watch us on YouTube, download, subscribe, give us a review, 5 stars, comments, always appreciated. But for Dr. Paz, for Kevin, thanks for listening. Until next time, have a good one, everyone.
Bye.